worse to report is that we have further confirmed the nutritional factors in that first that the nutrition alone appear to have effect on the what we have measured so far, those facial measurement anthropometrically, and those volume of the bone initially. But some of the measurement will fade out in time, for example, from P7 to P21. Some of them actually remain. When you have alcohol and the nutritional together, then there's a lot of long-lasting effect that will not go away. So obviously, what we have seen, or the measurement that we have seen, that when you have alcohol on board and have, then you have a nutritional disparity, the effect is much larger and much lasts longer, and something more permanent or definitive. So the thought that we would like to look into is that if people will not stop drinking, perhaps we can ameliorate by providing a much better nutritional supplement. So this is a thought we have, and perhaps would like to go into this direction. And actually, I have encouraged members from the board as well. The other interesting thing is that...
Well, let me interrupt and just ask about that. You mentioned that ethanol plus the nutritional factors cause longer-lasting effects on facial measurement than nutritional factors alone. But what about ethanol alone? Is ethanol plus nutritional factors longer lasting than ethanol alone?
Very good question. The ethanol will have a, for example, this is a compare between parafat with the ethanol with the liquid diet. It has some of the effect that linger all the way through. But when you have a nutritional effect, there are more the deficit that carries through. So there's a degree of the damage that when you have a nutrition factors in there.
Yeah.
So the other thing that we are developing at this point is slow, because it's not funded, is that we're moving towards the MRI to co-compare the micro CT with MRI, and we got a much closer to it. It's not satisfactory, but we are able to at this point perhaps measure the volume. This is talking about postnatal P7 to P21 with longitudinal observations. The MRI will only have a one-point time point. The micro-CT has two time points. That we are probably going to see the volumes. Perhaps we can attempt the cortical thickness, hippocampus, so these structures we're able to identify. So this just will be added to our micro-CT's measurement. This way we're moving from the face towards the brain with the same subjects of the mice we have been using. That's all I have for us.
Great.
Feng, if I may.
Question for Feng Zhou?
Yeah, this is Dale. Just coming back to the nutritional stuff, and I might have mentioned this on an earlier call, but my memory's hazy. What are your plans? Do your plans include teasing apart what specific nutritional deficit is contributing, or what are you thinking in terms of where you'll go with this?
Okay, that's a great question. In the last month or so, 2 months, is begin to do a few things to ascertain that the child group, how much really they have taken. So we have the weight per day they have taken, and compared to the liquid diet. So number one, we wanted to make sure that the overall calories between the two groups. And then we begin already looking into is that what is the content difference between the two nutritional groups. So we now look into, for example, choline, folic acid contents, look into the protein content, and then look into the lipid contents, whether these are different among the groups, and then to see what are the better supplements. We know that Jennifer is looking to choline, which is very, very interesting. So these will be the factor that we added back, or not only added back, perhaps supplement in a greater degree. That is what currently we're trying to analyze, what's the difference, and then to decide what will be a formulation for doing a supplement. So actually some of the idea that, Dale, you have mentioned that is really valuable.
Thanks.
You know, as you think about how this progresses, there's some. I think there are data out there that women who are drinking are less likely to take the supplements that are available to them now, in prenatal vitamins, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there just may be a structural limitation on what kind of whatever combination of micronutrient supplementation you come up with. And the strategy may be better directed towards diet per se than you know, if you're looking for strategies.
Yes, I think that's something that we would like to look into. I think a lot of this FAS women may be already into the drink in the first months without knowing they're pregnant, and whether these nutritional supplement will later on alleviating the initial insult is something we would be one of our target.
Very good. Charlie, do you have anything you want to tell us?
Last month I went down to Texas to work with Tim's group on the next cohort of animals, of sheep, for the I-blank and the T-maize. The major thing that project now is, and that cohort is just underway, that we are finding that with our improved technologies that we're able to get, I think, much better signals for analysis, and we're also seeing with some changes in the way we're performing the studies, the acquisition rates are look very similar to what we would see in humans. They're acquiring the sheep that we're looking at now are getting it certainly within 5 days, and probably more like 3 days, which is a good thing, because now we'll be able to see the control acquisition curve that matches more closely what other species have shown compared to what we did the first pass. But I think the more interesting side of this is that we have also, Tim has developed a working collaboration with the animal radiologists there. They have a new 3T magnet to do veterinary MRI studies, and they have performed, one initial scan on a brain that was just sitting around that he had kept in formalin for a while. I think this week they've got a new scan scheduled for, some pulse sequences that are improved, and with better preparation of the brain tissue, scanning times will be about 4 hours. I plan on going back down there the end of this month. I'm fairly confident that we will have structural MRI capabilities that will be quite good with the development of the procedures that's ongoing right now. The animals that it could be used on first would be coming up, I think, in early July. So so that I'm pretty confident, I think Tim is, that we can add the postmortem MRI scanning with reasonably good resolution to the protocol as these animals finish up. These animals will include both the alcohol treated groups as well as the alcohol treated group with choline supplementation. So we'll be able to include those in the cohort that's going through now. I think that's those are the main things. There are also they're developing some protocols to include. They have DTI capabilities that seem to be pretty advanced from what I could tell, though I'm certainly not an expert in that. So I think they're trying to work out ways to get DTI imaging concurrent with the structural imaging.
So can you do DTI on postmortem?
Well, that's not the plan, but...
I read into that, I guess, too much.
Yeah, no, but they actually can do DTI on postmortem.
Okay.
But I don't know what it means.
Yeah.
But one of the ongoing ideas here, they have both DTI and MRS capabilities to try to develop an in vivo imaging approach that wouldn't be necessarily part of the official protocol with these sheep, but to have it as a developmental process.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
It's a little more difficult in the sheep, although they can do it in vivo. They're set up to have the sheep there and to have them anesthetized to do it. But it's not clear exactly what it's going to tell us.
Yeah.
Those are the main things. I do plan on being back down there at the end of this month.
Great. Any other questions or comments for Tim? Tim and I guess Charlie.
Charlie, this is Rajesh. I was just going to ask. Next time that you're down, would you let me know as well, and we can share some of our ultrasound stuff as well there?
Yes. The last time I came was for a very compact and intense kind of period. I was there from Sunday through. Wednesday morning.
Yeah, I know.
And I really had no time to try to do that. But at the end of May, I'm going to have more time. So absolutely, we should try to
meet up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments for Charlie? If not, Rajesh, maybe you can give us an update.
Okay. Couple things. One is we've added more lambs to our
hearing very well. And that's are you on a speaker?
I'm on a speaker. Yes.
Yeah. I'm not,
sorry, I was leaning backwards.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Better.
Okay. So we added more lambs to our neonatal population. We were looking in Tim Cudd's three trimester model to look, and I reported before that we'd seen effects in the maternal plasma in terms of the microRNA expression, and then we'd had some lamb samples in the JAN meeting where we'd also seen persistent effects in the lamb. This is after the three trimester exposure, and then the lambs are born, and right away the blood is obtained. So we've added more samples to that, and we've just uploaded our data set to the our data analysis program, and we've also been talking with the Exicon people on ways to normalize the data, and I think we've got a pretty good normalization scheme now that looks like it's working, and we can use that to also tell whether any of our plasma samples are contaminated by lysis of cells, and it looks like out of the 12, six controls and six experimental ethanol treated, three samples are contaminated with cell lysis. So at least now we can start to tell, we have enough data to be able to start to tell what is a good sample and what is not. Anyway, so that's looking pretty promising. Tina Chambers and I just spoke last week about Getting ready to move this to the human, since we're not doing real-time PCR arrays, I think we can get there now in terms of the quantities that we need. If we can get 500 microliters of plasma, then we're good for two plates, that's the plate A and plate B of the microarray. And so we're pursuing the IRB protocols and things like that right now. And then we'll come back to the report to you. So that is with respect to the plasma microRNAs. What I'm also hearing or talking to the Exicon people is when we ultimately take this to the human beyond the, just a pilot project, we will need a large sample size to make this work. And so in their experiments, they're trying to get to a sample size of over 1,000. Patients. This is for colon cancer that they're working with. So, you know, I think, you know, since the CFAS group is has a lot of samples from different regions, particularly the geographic dispersion would be very valuable to have.
Yeah, your numbers might perhaps even need to be higher because in colon cancer, there's a dichotomy for characterizing or categorizing people, and here there may be a few people who are miscategorized because the drinking history isn't completely reliable.
Sure, and then effects like nutrition and things like that. What you know, what I heard in Jan about the South African group. I mean, that really seems like those are almost like a separate group of individuals, but those are the kinds of things that would be very interesting to tease out, you know, respective contributions of geography and nutrition and such on these types of profiles. But anyway, it's both interesting and kind of daunting as well at the same time. So that's with the micro RNA approach.
But let me ask another question before you move on.
Yes.
So, in looking back at the three samples that were contaminated by cell lysis, were there any differences in what you observed?
Well, what happens then is that those sample microRNA content profile is very, very different from everybody else. And what we also see is RNAs that should be located in the nucleus of cells and things like that.
Right.
Are really highly expressed, which is normal if you're looking at cells.
Right.
So they actually represent a separate cohort.
Yeah. I guess the question is, what assay are you using to detect cell lysis?
Well, we have no way of doing it. That's a good thought. One possibility might be to look at plasma lactate dehydrogenase activity and see if that can distinguish between samples.
Right. The reason I'm asking is that whatever assay you use is going to have a cutoff, but if you can look at the pattern, nuclear microRNAs is certainly one possibility. It may help you distinguish where you're below the threshold for identifying lysis, but where lysis may be still contributing to the pattern that you see. And finding a way to essentially factor out the microRNAs that are most abundant when there is obvious cell lysis and maybe discounting them or waiting against them.
Right, yes.
You haven't detected cell lysis, but where lysis may be occurring on a scale below your threshold for detection.
Right. So fortunately for us, and this has become apparent only after we've done a lot of these samples, is that ordinarily the members of the U6 family, for example, are very, very low expressed in our plasma samples. And so we assume that there is some lysis always occurring, but since U6 ordinarily is, you know, orders of magnitude more than most other microRNAs, the U6 family in general. But in this case, in these three samples, they were dispersed in the upper half of and even in the upper tenth of the samples. So those types of non-coding RNAs are becoming useful, and there's some of the SNORD RNAs and things like that.
Yeah.
But I think establishing an independent measure would be a nice idea. So I'll look into that.
Rajesh, another question. So I'm going to presume that when the cell's lysed, there are RNases released, and are the circulating microRNAs vulnerable?
Protected against, yeah. So what we're learning both from the literature and our own experience is that these circulating microRNAs are largely contained in vesicles. And the other way, parallel way we're working right now to maybe that'll circumvent this problem is to actually isolate vesicles. So right now we are getting ready to do an electron microscopy study to just verify that we're isolating vesicles. That might actually, if that's successful, that'll just bypass this whole issue. Then we can isolate vesicles even from lysed samples.
What is your prep? When you take blood,
so we isolate the plasma. So you can do serum or plasma, and that's one thing we're playing with.
Right.
We're right now isolating plasma, not serum. And then what we do is we freeze dry the sample down because the volume, the concentration has to be. We have to concentrate the volume quite a bit, and then from there we work the analysis. What we're now doing is using an immunoprecipitation approach to isolate the vesicles, but that's kind of an ongoing thing. This first group was not done that way.
Right. Are you doing an ultracentrifugation step to get the vesicles?
We're trying to avoid that because that's always a bit messy. So the current state of the art, if you will, is immunoprecipitation types of steps.
Yeah.
There we're going to verify that at the electron microscopic level to make sure we actually have vesicles.
Yeah.
But anyway, those are the kind of things that are going on. I'm not sure what to do about the human samples. We'll have to see what type of loss we get when we try to recover vesicles. In other words, is there stuff left behind and, we're not able to recover all the vesicles? If we're going to start with 500 microliter, we may not have the luxury to do the vesicle isolation, and we might have to look at statistical approaches like we were talking about earlier to see if we've got contamination from cell lysis.
Given that those samples are going to be drawn and processed under conditions that are not under your control, it might make sense to do some normal controls just from volunteers to work it out.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a good idea.
Because the samples are going to be precious, but there may be a lot of variability in how they're processed.
Yeah.
You might try to control for some of that just by making that an experimental variable. I don't know how they're handled in Ukraine, but it would be good to get that information and just to see if variable times or how long things sit around before they're centrifuged and they separate plasma or serum. Are they doing plasma or serum in Ukraine? I can't recall.
Well, whichever they're doing, it turns out that the vesicles, there's two schools of thought. There's some people who think that actually using serum might be better because you deplete the clotting factors.
Right.
And those could interfere. So, whichever way, we'll have to just, I think your idea is good, and we could get some normal plasma or serum samples. Right now we've done mouse, rat, and sheep, and those all look like they work.
Right.
But then if we can get some control samples from the Ukraine cohort, that are less precious maybe.
Right. The major difference between the samples from mice, rats, and sheep and the humans is going to be the variability in the processing, because typically when you draw blood from laboratory animals, you're ready to process it immediately.
Yeah, exactly. And it's under controlled conditions that are...
Rajesh, my question is that does the circulating microRNA or non-coding RNA have any signature specifically to the circulation versus the cells as sliced?
That's absolutely right, yes. So that's what we're trying to do in the absence of other ways. So, for example, some of the, like I said in the JAN meeting, The highly expressed microRNAs in circulation tend to be ones that are found at very, very rare levels in cells, and they've been identified by deep sequencing in stem cell populations. So there's some kind of a they are highly expressed in plasma. So that would constitute one signature, if you will. And the other is some of these nuclear RNAs, they're not microRNAs, but nuclear non-coding RNAs and all, are very, very low ordinarily in plasma, but extremely high in cells. So we can use that kind of dichotomy.
That could be another way to get around. Yeah,
yeah, so that's right. Right now, that's the way we are doing it. But I like the idea of simultaneously assessing the plasma for something like lactate dehydrogenase activity or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a nice independent measure. But anyway, so that's with the microRNA project. And then just a little update on the ultrasound project. I think we're getting ready to write the paper right now. But what we've seen is, aside from acute effects of ethanol immediately on blood flow through the cerebrovascular system, there's actually a persistent effect that we can see 24 hours and 48 hours later. The suppression continues for a while. And I think the explanation, I think, is that it's vasodilation that we're seeing, like a persistent vasodilation in the cerebral vasculature. And then Andy Hall in the meeting had asked whether these extremely high intensity ultrasounds that we were using could damage tissues. So we did a series of experiments where we looked for tissue damage, and I'm happy to say, no, we don't see tissue damage due to that.
Rajesh, how are you looking for tissue damage?
A couple of different ways. We looked at pulsed the base of the brain with the vascular circulation, the middle cerebral arteries coming up and anterior cerebrals in that area, and then we looked for evidence of cell damage. Just look at the light microscopic level with NISL, and then we looked at fluorojade labeling, and with neither of those could we see any evidence.
Uh-huh. And can you say a little bit about the direction and magnitudes of the effects for your acute effect of ethanol on blood flow and for the persisting effect?
So let's see. I'm just pulling up the graph here. So for the velocity time integral, which is like the cardiac output through the peripheral vessels, following the acute effect, there's about a 50% drop in the VTI, and that is maintained. So when we look at the next day, that is maintained roughly close to there, and then it slowly rises back up again, whereas in the control animals, there's over time, so there's a gestational effect, there's actually an increase a doubling of the velocity time integral. That's one example. So when you look finally at the end, basically what looks like is happening is that the effect of ethanol is to basically suppress the developmental profile of this particular measure, is one example.
Yep.
But that's what's going on in our neck of the woods.
Good. Any other progress reports? Comments from either John or Dale?
No, I have nothing further. I think much enjoyed hearing what Miranda was up to. I hadn't... You're asking some great questions in there, Michael. And it seems like everything seems to be going well.
I think these projects are moving along well. The sheep are, of course, slow because they take their time having babies. And we certainly look forward to getting some of the data from the new batch coming in July. But the rest sounds like good progress and I think good continued integration with the clinical projects, both in terms of questions related to nutritional supplementation, which have come back from the clinical projects, as well as looking for markers in clinical samples. I think those are both important.
Yeah.
integrative steps to be taking as we begin to think about the next phase of this project. Dale, any comments?
No, just that it's been a good talk. It's unfortunate that about half the group couldn't make it, but nevertheless, it was a good, lively discussion. It sounds like things are going quite well.
Yeah. Now, Jill, do we plan to meet in early June or to wait for the RSA meeting?
I think we should meet in June.
Okay, that sounds good.
So it'll be the first week, so that will be June 7th. And then just a reminder to respond to the Doodle poll if you haven't done so already, and then to send me your complete PDF of your progress report from face page to checklist by June 1st or earlier.
Very good. Do you need something on the U24 from me?
Nope, you're all set.
Okay, good.
So we did your final progress report last time, along with Dr. Thomas and Dr. Halls.
Very good. Okay. Any other issues that you want to see aired, Jill?
Just another reminder to get your publications. I heard some talk about some things coming out. Just get those on the Google Docs so that we can get them on the consortium website. And if there are any other things that the group feels should be on the consortium website, we're always welcome to hear those comments.
All right. Thanks to everybody, and look forward to speaking with you in early June.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Bye. Bye-bye.